of the Canadian Philosophy Show, we have moved to a new archival location, and that can be found at tcps.podbean.ca or .com, one of the two. That's tcps.podbean.ca or .com. All right, so back to the thing. So basically, I'm forced to have this real sense of existential openness because I cannot afford to be alone. I cannot afford to continue in as Sartre would put it, to be forlorn, alone, and in despair. I can be in despair and I can be forlorn, but I cannot afford to be alone. So I learned how to reach out and create relationships very, very quickly. And it was in those relationships that once I see how Hale, if Hale has anything to add, we can then move into actualization. Because this is where my philosophy journey comes in. This is where we are today kind of comes in. So, but I want to see if Hale has anything to add before I get there.
Yeah, I really like everything you're saying so far, Tegan. Really, the only thing that comes up for me so far, again, before we move into actualization, is, again, discussing the role of narratives, right? We talked earlier about how, you kind of hinted, like, we have... basically, we're talking about a model in which we have, and perspectives in which we have free will. And free will comes with, it comes with its, you might call it bonus points, right? The ability to seemingly make decisions, as we're talking about, being an active participant. But it also comes with responsibility and mistakes and guilt and that kind of thing, and blame. In a way, right? Free will allows for a lot more ethical variation, essentially, in our perspectives of ourselves and others. And that's where I think the narratives come in and get so powerful, because narratives really, like, are particularly influential insofar as they have a sort of some kind of ethical import, right? Like, you know, If basically stories about whether or not I'm good or bad, whether or not the world around me is good or bad, and those translate in all sorts of different ways, but that's the kind of base level of it, right? At least from my view, most of the time. And so when I, it has a, how I interpret my world and how I particularly interpret my past as to and real and who I am, by extension, is going to have a huge effect on what options or what futures seem available to me, right? You know, if I live in a narrative or carry a narrative where I've essentially, let's just say, where I've been super hard done by, some sort of variation of what we call like a victim narrative. Not to say that victimization is not a real thing, because it absolutely is. But if that's the sort of, if that's the tint that I color my life with, it's going to have a huge impact on what would seem like reasonable options for me to participate in, right? It kind of decides what sort of game I'm living, essentially.
Yeah, and I appreciate that note, Hale, because that's exactly it. You know, I throughout my life have constructed a narrative out of this need that I spoke about to foster relationships of care, and that have fluctuated, unfortunately, between one of empowerment and one of saying this is how my life is, right. And saying, yeah, the disability is part of who I am, but it's not all encompassing of who I am, and it's not all that I am. I don't come up to someone and say, "Hi, I'm Tegan, I'm disabled," because in the physical sense, That is very much apparent. Now, there's often questions about how much is affected, and then I can invite them into that world that I spoke of, and I can share with them the reality of that. And sometimes they're surprised because I present totally different to what they would expect. I think it is important. One of the things that I'm grappling with in terms of education is this idea that the term disabled is a negative term, and that we need to have conversations about changing the term. And this is where I think Dr. Lawrence and I agree, that if you already have the perspective that although the disability is part of you, but is not all of who you are, the language that is used around that in its current form of disability and disabled does not need to change, because those are terms that do not define the person in the situation. They define the actual physical limitation. And what I'm concerned with in my view of academia, maybe Hale totally disagrees with me and says you're just being a hard-headed individual. But my view is, if you've already empowered the person to perceive themselves in the most active way possible, and they know who they are, both because of and in spite of, the language I don't think has such a visceral response. Now, that doesn't mean if I met someone and they said, well, I prefer diverse ability or whatever, that doesn't mean I wouldn't go along with that, but I would work with that person to see what their narrative is, to see where they came to that conclusion, and maybe say that your decisions show me that there's more to you than your disability. Some decisions are made for you, as Hale and I have discussed, but this is where my journey of philosophy comes in the next little bit, that I want to dive into kind of really intensely and talk about. But just before that, Hale, was there anything you wanted to add?
No, I'm interested to hear what you have to say, though.
Okay, so my journey in philosophy probably stems partially from this desire to be like, okay, there's got to be something more to life than this. You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be more to life than just doing the day-to-day things. I've inherited my father's romantic heart, and so I'm naturally attracted and inclined to believe that there is some deeper meaning and purpose that I have to pursue and achieve. And so when I came to VIU in the September of 2018, I originally started in psychology. Here's the thing. I'm not a hard sciences guy. I also have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which makes things like executive functioning more difficult than the average Joe to do. And I was like, yeah, I'm not memorizing how a neuron works. But I had taken a philosophy course on my Discovery Day. For those of you who don't know what Discovery Days are, it's basically a time where local high school students can come with their academic advisor and experience a taste of university courses. And the professor who Hale and I both know, Robert Peppersmith, was doing that course, and the content just really stirred something in my heart. and stirred something in me that was like, I want to learn more about this. This is what I'm looking for. Because a lot of philosophy, although, yeah, there's like formal logic and all that stuff, a lot of that is told, especially the Socratic dialogues, is told in an, because it's a dialogue, is a narrative. It's a narrative that depicts events and experiences. And so I took one philosophy course and then I took another one, and I decided this is what I want to do, because I was finding answers. I was finding hope. I was finding joy in the study of these texts, and it was helping me make sense of who I am as a person. And it was also the first time that, in a very real way, because we've all gone through elementary school and high school, your schedule, maybe except for some electives, is pretty much chosen for you. You're doing the same stuff every week, every year, all the time. And for me, who doesn't have a lot of agency to like go traveling or even pursue romantic relationships at points, because there's added challenges and difficulties, I was like, nice, I get to choose what I want to do. And I felt freed in that moment. I felt freed, and I felt joy, because I was able to talk to people about things that I love to talk about in dialogue with. And something that Robert shared with the class when we were looking at the Republic of Plato, we looked at the fact that death is the final roadblock for us, that death is the one thing, or as the Greek says, the final aporia, that we cannot escape, right? And so having a conversation about how we live a virtuous and just life and leave a legacy in that sense is super, super key and important to how I operate, which is partially why I think I am so so invested and so interested in things like, you know, future goals of having a family and stuff like that in the future. Because that's another way where I can ensure that what I have learned goes on to the next group of people I influence. And so I think for people with disabilities, we take any sense of agency we can get in a very real sense. Some can utilize public transportation, and that opens avenues for them to explore new locations and take opportunities. Because of other challenges I have, that's not as easy. But what I do have the gift to do is setting up long-term things that I can do and engage with, like the radio show or like education, to ensure that I am doing something that brings me joy and hope and optimism. And this is kind of why I wrote the thesis, because ultimately what we do in life comes out of, as Hale said, the narratives that we believe, the narratives that we create, or the narratives that we hear. Right. I have a friend who is known for saying, I never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Right. I never let the truth limit the joy of a narrative. But because I grew up in a time where, and I still see this, where there is this sense of, oh, we want to help people with disabilities reach their full potential. But very rarely is the individual consulted. I think that's problematic, because it does not allow that person to take some time and really look inside themselves with these philosophical tools and say, what, in terms of phenomenology, that question would be, what is the fundamental commitment of my heart? What is the thing that I want to do? What is the thing that keeps me moving forward? And you know, to speak about philosophy and its freeing, we need to look at the Phaedo by Socrates and look at how Socrates, on this day, he's awaiting his execution. The Athenians are like, we're done with this guy. You know, he's making our sophists, who were basically teachers of rhetoric, their whole goal was, we can show you how to win an argument by making the weaker argument the stronger one. Socrates was like, not today, losers. And would cause the young men of Athens to laugh because the sophists would just humiliate themselves. They wouldn't be able to stand against Socrates' arguments. And so they were like, we got to take this guy out. And what Socrates says, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the text in front of me, is super interesting. Is he says that philosophy, the art and practice of philosophy, of gaining knowledge through what he calls the theory of recollection, through skillful questioning to recall the language that your very being had gathered in the land of the forms before it had entered its body, you know, your physical body, and had been imprisoned, in keeping with Greek mysticism. Right? Philosophy is preparing you for death, because in death your soul will be freed from the cage of the body, and your mind is basically your soul, your psyche, your psyche. And so I find it very interesting, because for me, I've always been a very verbal communicator. And it's been skills that I've developed. And I think that philosophy, although it's dependent on language, some of these techniques are nonverbal techniques. Taking time to explore your world through your imagination process, through your emotions, and to see how that's informed your worldview, and to see how that's leading you into the future. Obviously, there's a lot I could say about existentialism and the stepping out of the world of which I was raised into the world of which I am now. There's a lot to that. One of the ways I did that was I realized that relationships I once had were changing. And I often say to people, we can't control necessarily what happens to us, but we can control how we respond to it. And that's exactly what my thesis suggests, is philosophy does two things. It helps you explore and interpret your world, but it also helps you to step out and continue to take that knowledge and look at that knowledge and say, what knowledge am I going to take with me to create the next chapter of my life? Yeah, there's a lot I could say there, but I'm just curious to see, hey, what's your thoughts? Do you have any questions? Do you want any clarity in these next couple minutes?
I think that's awesome taken, and it's really inspiring to hear someone who's taken philosophy so much to heart in their own life. You know, one of the ways that I kind of reinterpret what you're saying, especially when you come out of actualization and what does philosophy look like in that role, is, you know, we talked about being responsible individuals. We talked about being participants in our own lives, right? Not being necessarily completely in control all the time, but not being just sloshed around by, you know, the sea of events either. And I think for me, one of the ways, which I think you already kind of iterated, that philosophy plays a role in that is, sometimes I like to call it like the existential step back, right? Philosophy helps me to get and I think for a lot of other people that I know, and it sounds like for yourself too, get like a bigger picture idea on what's going on, right? There's always particular events I'm dealing with. There's always particular feelings. There's always particular thoughts. There's always particular situations, particular people, whatever you want to say, in a particular world. But like, what are the more fundamental strands that lead through everything? What are the more fundamental principles, fundamental concepts that sort of color and structure everything that we do? And you actually brought up one, which I think is super important. And I think that our society in general is in denial of, and that's mortality, right? That's death, right? And that's something that comes up a lot. And I know both a lot of the thinkers that we've already brought up and that both you and I have read quite a bit of, primarily existentialist phenomenologists, right? Specifically talking about the phenomenology of death, like in Heidegger and stuff like that. Whether we realize it or not, every decision that we make, everything that we do, our entire world is in a sense spread out against the horizon of our own mortality. And something that philosophy really helped me to do in that perspective is, you know, at moments where I perhaps really need to think about something, at moments where I have this a kind of greater sense of wonder or clarity, making decisions, being that participant with knowledge of that horizon, toward that horizon, right? Not just being someone who's like, I'll have an infinite succession of days to do whatever I want, right? And you know, abnegating that kind of responsibility and recognizing like, no, whether it's tomorrow or 65, 70 years from now, you know, a mortality is always just around the corner. And so, you know, in light of that, how do I make my decisions? And I think even also more importantly, the thing we think about too with philosophy is I thought about like, how do those fundamental concepts of the experience and as we talked about of the heart and all that kind of stuff, how do those actually color the things that we interact with in the world, right? Like, how is it, you know, something that I really got from, especially you mentioned a prof, Robert Peppersmith, and through him, and especially like working on some phenomenology with him, was this like, yeah, this idea that, you know, in an odd sense, death or mortality, you know, it makes everything that we experience possible. Who we are, what we do, the imports of our entire life, we might call its texture, is one that only makes sense within the context of being temporal and being temporally limited. You know, I sometimes like to think about it like, if I was a god, if I could be so lucky, if I was never born, if I'll never die, you know, and I'm at no risk of ever dying, I would live in a completely different world. The things that are important to me now here, like, they would not resonate in the same kind of way. They would be completely different. And so I think that those sorts of fundamental concepts are things that philosophy has really helped me with. And then that sort of imbues out into an understanding how do I actually want to live my life in the more particular scenarios that those envelop.
Yeah, I appreciate your concrete examples there, Hale. Thank you very much. I think, Hale, you were actually at class that day because Hale and I took a series of existentialism courses together. So that's why he and I are talking shop bargain so much at this point. But jargon, not bargain, what the heck? Anyway, but bargain jargon, man. We're bargaining with death and life right here. But anyways, one of the things I remember saying to Robert, especially when we were talking about that stepping out, that stepping away from the world we've always known, is that an uncomfortable experience. That is in fact, the things that used to feel normal will feel uncanny, will feel uneasy. You'll look at those differently. You'll do, as Hale said, the existential step back, and you'll be like, how is this helping me move forward? And I remember asking Robert literally in that class, I said, Robert, I said, what if you've done that your whole life? What if you felt that way your whole life, that everything you've done seems unreal to you? The fact that I've made it to 22 years old feels unreal to me. What do I do about that? And he said, I don't know, Hale, if you remember this, but he said, well, that demonstrates to me that you have a unique sense, awareness, and attunement to that reality that death comes towards us out of the future. And I said to him, as I passed him in a hallway, I said, Robert, does this ever go away? Can this ever stop? I just want it to stop. I want to feel normal. We were studying Heidegger at the time. He said, when you found what it is you love and what it is you're passionate about, your being will find rest. It won't cease to explore, but your being will find contentment. And this is why I've chosen to go down the path of this thesis project. Every day, people with disabilities are faced with impossible choices. Limited choices, but impossible choices. How do I communicate this need? How do I find who I am outside of this? These are all questions that philosophy can give you the tools to work out. And we do that primarily through community. In sharing knowledge, right, my goal is to become a philosophy professor to help people see how where they've been has gotten them to where they are, and where they are through introspection can get them to where they want to be. Thank you very much, and thank you, listeners, for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you have a fantastic week. We'll see you next week.
Archived recordings of the Canadian Philosophy Show on mixcloud.com/the Canadian Philosophy Show and tcps.podbean.com.
We would do anything for our kids. What parent wouldn't? I'm just glad they're still so young, so we can speak in code in front of them. But they must wonder why we're always camping.
Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
Slippery path is not feared by two.